Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Superfan Chats, the show where we discuss game theories about our beloved podcast, No Small Roles, and for this episode in particular, reminisce over the wonder that was the Winthrop arc. What an arc it was.
Oh, so good.
It was amazing.
Such an emotional roller coaster as well. Like, so much going on, so much to discuss. So that's why we're here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, considering that all the past arcs have been really, really good, and then they just somehow pick it up to... The stakes seem so much higher in this somehow.
So much more.
Considering they were dealing with Undead Army, like, weeks ago.
Undead Army.
Yeah, it's like now even bigger army. Just all the armies, really. Everyone's trying to kill everyone and take the throne. That's it. Well, I am super fan Hannah, but not the Hannah that you expect. Think of me as an alternate reality or a variant Hannah, if you will.
I think Lord Crumpet.
Lord Crumpet.
Leader of the Rolios.
Since we are the Crumpets now, according to Grace, I should be Lord Crumpet, so I'm the Lord of the Crumpets now.
Yay!
Yeah, good. See, it's accepted now. Democracy.
Welcome, Crumpet.
Welcome, Lord Crumpet.
Welcome, Lord Crumpet.
Oh, I love that we've got more super fans joining this as well. It's great.
Yay! I'm so glad, because it's like, I just discuss this, so I work with David, so I just discuss it with him. And obviously he can't tell me anything because he's the DM. So I'm just like spouting stuff at him and he's just like, yes, good.
I do feel like we might get a little bit of this today though, because obviously Superfan Pippa over here kind of made herself invaluable by showing her skills with editing Superfan Chats. Has now, I believe, been able to edit future episodes. You're a bit of...
I've done a couple.
She's been codified. Get her out.
She's codified.
I'm sorry, that information is restricted to higher ranking superfans.
No!
No!
Even Lord Crumpet is not high enough as a rank.
But I'm very excited to come back in, it'll be like end of November, I guess, to talk about those episodes with you.
That's very true.
Oh God, you just, have you started writing now? You've just got all the notes already. There's no point in us. It'll just be a Pippa episode. Let me talk about this episode and now this episode and now this episode.
We'll just be spectating the entire time just on Zoom like, yes, good. Amazing. Right, well, let's kick this off then with episode 40.
Yes, we have a codex to talk about.
We do. Actually, just before we start this, it's in the name, and to be honest, if you're listening to this, you've probably listened to other episodes, but just in case you haven't, spoiler alert, spoiler, 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 spoiler alert, we're going to be talking in detail about these episodes, and, you know, it's 40 to 43, so if you haven't listened to those, we might sound nice, but this is pointless to you, so go do that first. Okay.
Yeah, you can listen to all of the previous part about me being a crumpet, but stop, go away.
Begone.
Begone. Right, so episode 40, The Codex, the big one.
Yeah.
So, main summaries of the episode. Enkidu dies. Enkidu actually dies because initially I was like, oh no, David's done this before. Like, obviously with, you know, the Into Tomorrow stuff. Yeah. I was like, it's not real. Like, it's going to be some other thing. But no, Enkidu,
some kind of loophole.
His body is gone. He is dead. The Enkidu we know is gone. And that is a lot.
He is now a raisin.
He's now a prune.
A raisin.
A prune of his former self.
Oh no.
Yeah, honestly, so upsetting. And honestly, like, I wasn't upset because I was just in disbelief. Like, no, he's fine.
Yeah.
Something else has happened. But the entire episode, he is gone. So obviously when Erida comes around saying, oh, hey, like, you can see him, everyone's like, eh? What are you talking about? Obviously, the conversation with him was pretty useless, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, listening back over the episode is just, nope. High-ranking family members, you're not good enough, sorry.
It was so frustrating, like, hearing it come from Daryl as well.
Yeah.
And kudos to Daryl, who was amazing throughout these episodes.
Like, yes.
Obviously, all of them were, but Daryl having that extra information and so many versions of himself, and he just played it so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he had to essentially consort with the DM and exclude all of his friends for this entire, basically the rest of the arc. Like, he's definitely going to know a lot more about what's going to happen and what, like, him... Mm-hmm. as this codified person is going to be. And it's really hard because he's formed such a bond with these people, and now that he's got to be like, I don't know what I am or what I can do, and they've just got to trust him. Like, I don't trust him, I won't lie. I don't trust Enkidu now.
Well, this is the difficult thing, is because Enkidu was always the one that you knew exactly what he was thinking. Like, he was very, like, upfront about how he felt about things, very kind of, like, hard to hide how he's feeling.
Yeah.
And so, like, full of honor, and, you know, this is the right path. And when you take that away from him, like, now you can't necessarily trust that he's doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
What does that leave you with, other than somebody that's, like, very, very strong that you can't trust?
Yeah.
But for all intents and purposes, seems like the same person. It's a weird position for, you know, not just him to be in, but the party to be in as well, of, like, we want to accept this guy, but can we?
Yeah. No, exactly. But obviously, with the codified information comes all of the backstory about Orin and Gaius, potentially.
Lore drop.
All of the lore drop, where they fail with talking to Enkidu and finding out anything from him. They get all of the names. So Corsica's Vindigolf gets brought up. Helica Ringthrup and her sons Corsica's Vindigolf and Eremir Aris,
mm-hmm.
who apparently is Gaius's dad, maybe, potentially, because that's Gaius's middle name. What?
So cool.
What?
I was named after my dad.
Just going shouting, Daddy! Honestly, a moment for me.
I love it.
It was a lot. Like, this K that they've been following and who's been helping them could potentially be Gaius's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Kral at all.
Well,
no.
This is one thing that really confused me, because it could still be Kral. It was mentioned that Kral was brought into, like, you know, the Wingthruff, you know, what they were working on.
Mm-hmm.
So technically we're looking into the future. That could still be him as the K.
Yeah.
But through trying to find out who that K is, we now maybe know who Gaius's dad is. I don't know. It could go either way. Could be neither.
I mean, if Corsicus and Kral are the same person...
Oh, don't.
Oh.
How horrible would that be for Gaius, knowing that he's related to him? Like, could you imagine if that's what you find out at the end, that this horrible sorcerer gone mad is his dad?
What, last episode? It's just like, oh, by the way, Kral was your dad.
No!
Yeah.
No!
Like, talk about a bad family tree. Like, geez, you know, with all of his trouble with his siblings as well that he mentions, like, not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
There was a lot of kind of, you know, I don't know whether you drew up the family tree as well, but you got, like, you know, Volus and Helica. They were the ones that had Corsicus and Eremir, and then they both did the advancement test or something, but then went missing, is kind of the sense that I got.
They progressed to the rank of captain, and then they disappeared. So, you know, with the Codex sort of version of Helica being like, if you find them, like, do let us know, because we'd like to know where they are. So I'm wondering whether it's a similar thing as to what's happened to our, like, guys, where they've done the test with a series of people. So, like, if Corsicus and Eremir did it together, someone they know has died, and they've just been like, no, this isn't the family for me, and they've just gotten out of it because they've, like, realised... Like, you know, it was the turning point for realising that the Wingthrups don't mess about. Like, they do not mess about. Like, they literally asked, do you support our family values? Nope, you're dead.
Yeah.
That
and
is
now
essentially
you will.
Yeah, and now you're in our system, bye.
Yeah.
So I genuinely think that that's what happened, is that they were like, no, we're not being a part of this family because we don't believe in these values. And they've just, you know, because there's no suggestion that they change the test, you know.
No,
so essentially they did exactly the same thing, the tubes and the questions and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
that's probably what happened.
I just kind of wonder, what happens if you do the advancement test on your own? Like, would it be a completely different test? Because I think we talked about this with the puzzles in the first cube, that they were kind of set up for multiple people. But yeah. I'm guessing some people can do those tests on their own. So is it, you know, does the cube randomize and they have different challenges that they do?
Yeah, that's a good question.
If they wanted to do the advancement test and only one tunnel is open, is it just that they answer questions incorrectly or something and then they get zapped, or, you know, are the questions different and it's not about trying to find out who is the you know, the most likely to foil any codex plans in the future? You know, maybe it is a case of, you know, that is just for multiple people.
Yeah,
like a personality test, except you take it by yourself. So it's like, do you believe in this? And if you say the wrong thing, the electricity comes closer to you, kind of thing.
Yeah, it just fills by like 50%. Yeah. And then
yeah,
you could get it wrong twice.
It is an interesting one though with the cube, because obviously that, as much as that was in a previous episode, how would you do that by yourself? Because I suppose you could be smart enough to do it by yourself, especially stuff like the table leg. Like, Orin essentially did that by himself.
Yeah.
So it's definitely possible. I think the only one is them getting into the, so the rerouting of everything. They kind of had to have everyone there.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah.
Well, it just maybe would have taken them longer. I'd love to have seen Myra take that test.
Oh, should have aced it.
I think she just would have walked in there and be like, it's obviously the table leg.
Yeah. Just taken the mick out of everyone and been like, it's obviously this. You guys are useless.
Yeah. She's small enough to deal with all the crawl spaces as well.
Yeah, she would like scratch out all the clues and be like, no, that's cheating. I don't need that.
Yeah.
I don't accept this help. Thank you. Bye.
I find those clues, like, it still kind of plays on my mind though, because to me, if someone's going to put clues in that room, it kind of makes me feel like they've done it before, which again would lead into the it's from Crowl, not Causticus side of things. Once you've done it, aren't you kind of really keen to like advance and carry on and move on to the next room? Unless, of course, it is Causticus leaving clues for his younger brother who is about to do it.
That is actually a really interesting theory.
That was my other thought.
That's a good point, because there's no indication of age. Like, they just say, these are my two sons, Causticus and Eremir. Exactly. So there's no indication of who's the older one, or whether, even if they're like twins, do you know what I mean? Like, there's no of indication of age or time, or, you know, for all we know, Eremir's the younger brother.
And maybe it was, I mean, no reason to think this, but maybe Causticus was kind of the more intelligent son and looked after like his younger brother, and he was pretty convinced that Eremir was not going to pass the test on his own, left him all the little clues to give him a little bit of a head start to get through it.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Maybe.
No, I like that.
I really like that as well.
We'll see.
But what do we think about heritage? Like, who do we think? If we're going along the basis that, because it was kind of found out like the Volus Hemlock link, you know, he just said, I want to speak to Volus, and a Volus appeared, who just so happened to be connected to this family, you know,
just
married
to Helica's wife.
Helica, yeah. Who clearly died in his advancement test, I think. He was going for the captain rank. But yeah, if we're kind of tying the things together, do we think, do Orin and Gaius come from the same parent? Are they both Causticus?
I don't know. I was under the impression
is one Causticus, one Eremir?
That's what I was wondering. Yeah, whether they're cousins.
If we're assuming that Causticus is Gaius's dad, and then Volus is
Orin's granddad?
Yeah.
Yeah, Orin's granddad. Then that is cousins. Very exciting.
Yeah, it really is.
But no hemlock, though.
I mean, it could all be red herrings, and, you know, David is just really enjoying, you know, name links.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah, because hemlock didn't come up at all. So they looked for him and they were like, he's not, or he or she is not part of the codex. So that is a name we are yet to explore. So there'll be stuff coming from that as well.
Yeah. Could be from Orin's mother's side, for example.
Exactly.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah. I didn't know if it, like, had hex heritage. I don't know, something about it seems like, you know, hemlock poisoning. Yeah
I did think of that. I was like, I swear hemlock's like a herb or some sort of thing.
So isn't it like a poisonous plant or something like that?
I feel like Sam gets to using a search engine to try and find out.
Yeah, because obviously I know of like deadly nightshade, and that's the kind of it.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of that kind of thing.
Any other herbs that just use for cooking, so I have no idea.
Juno would know.
Flower check.
Oh, here we go. Yes. So hemlock is a poison. Highly poisonous flowering plant in the in the carrot family, apparently. It's a poisonous carrot.
Poisonous carrot.
Yeah.
Orin's a poisonous carrot. Tell it, friends.
So this is, maybe this is like he is supposed to be the poison to the Wingthrop family. Like, maybe there is a tie to, like, you know, Volus being, I don't know, maybe. You know, if it's given name.
Whoa. Very true.
Mm.
And then obviously the episode ends with the golem. The pronunciation was discussed. Yes, the 50,000 strong army just sat there waiting for someone to take the throne. As Erida discussed, that's literally their purpose, is to put someone on the throne.
Yeah. Oh,
not that they're going to reveal who, because, you know, higher ranking family members.
But also, that is being added to all the time. It's a, you know, it's a conveyor belt of non-stop.
Yeah.
And now the next one is ready. Yep. And now the next one is ready.
Stick a wand on
them. The longer they leave this, the bigger that army gets.
Yeah.
That is terrifying.
Did anybody get like a, you know, the Helm's Deep fight kind of look when the lightning flashes and you see just like the tide of orcs? Spoilers if you haven't watched Lord of the Rings, but there's lots of orcs. But yeah, it was like that scene.
Coming out
screaming
of the,
like just all these golems behind him in face masks.
No, 100%. I'm guessing it's like they're like imbued with the souls of soldiers who have been codified.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that would make sense, wouldn't it?
And that's terrifying, the fact that you could die and then you're used to power essentially as a battery for this army. And like, you've got no choice in it. Do you know what I mean? These are just like programmed machines. So you've got no choice in fighting this battle. You just got to go for it. So it's the idea of more people, if more people take this test and more people fail this test, the bigger their army will be. And that is horrible to think that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But also, and it's so simple to produce, I'm guessing, from the way that they've described it. There's two wands being created, and each golem has a wand as they're created. So it's either like a protection spell or a blasting spell. It's that simple. So you'll just come back and you'll be like, okay, I guess I'm a blaster then. Cool. I'll go sit with my 49,909 other friends.
Mm. Oh, God. Like, I'm all for recycling things, but that's just not cool.
Reuse, recycle.
It makes them ranged attackers as well. It's not like they don't have to do hand-to-hand combat with that, though. Mm. Kind of makes them even more prolific.
No, definitely.
And as we find out from, well, I'm guessing Pepper's going to tell us in a minute, but, you know, these golems, they're not exactly, you know, pushovers.
No.
Nope.
They're pack-a-punch.
High hit points.
Yeah, I know, right?
High damage as well.
And then after that big revelation, obviously we get Enkidu 1 run out, and then Enkidu 2 run out, completely naked, with Erida's head in his hand. And then the first one comes out in what was described as a onesie, or like a beach onesuit.
Yeah.
A bodysuit.
Yeah. Yes, the Victorian bodysuit, which is just very strange. It was just
very strange.
Like, and then Enkidu runs out again, and you're like, what? Yeah. No, hold on. It was so good.
Just love the way, Enkodu's on his way to a Lido.
Enkodu.
In his bathing suit.
Yeah.
And then naked Enkidu with Erida being like, we need to get out. And then next thing you know, the battle begins. So I suppose we'll lead to the next episode.
Yeah.
So, we've got the two Enkidus. Do we call them Enkidu and Enkodu? That was what they were calling
I feel like that's what Daryl named himself. Yeah, I feel like it's Enkidu just with numbers. So it's like 3-N-D-1 and the rest of the letters that I can't think of right now. But, you know.
Yeah, like a registration plate on the back of him.
One and then a two or something like that. Enkidu.
Yeah.
Just
like,
if you want to refer to all of them, just call them Enkidai, like Hakidai.
Like that.
Nice. Yeah. Pluralizing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so this episode, the first thing that I want to talk about is you've got obviously these two Enkidus.
Enkiduo.
Oh, nice. That was good.
Very good. Not for long, though, because Gaius throws the bodysuit Enkidu off the platform and he plummets to his death, I was going to ask you guys, was that a good idea, or do you think he was a bit hasty about disposing of that Enkidu?
I absolutely loved it. That, like, this is Sparta moment.
I know, right? As an action moment, incredible. It's just that I would be worried as the sort of like real sort of codex, I suppose, Enkidu, because I'm like, oh God, he just disposed of me like that. Like, if I show anything up, I'm going to get pushed off the platform. Like,
it was a bit of a power play, wasn't it?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It was interesting because he seemed to be going in the same direction as them. He seemed to kind of be, you know, they hadn't got far enough to see whether he was going to help them. But, you know, they could have potentially disposed of him later and could have done with an extra ally in this battle about 50,000 golems.
Well, that's a point, actually.
But would he have helped them, or would he turned on them?
I don't know.
That's a question.
Because he was supposed to act like the real Enkidu, so...
Yeah.
So he probably would have helped them then. by that logic.
You would have thought up to a point he would have helped them.
Mm, but I reckon if they'd have kept him, I reckon when Quanta came out, then he would have turned.
He would have turned.
I think that's what would have happened.
Yeah, that's not great.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Or we would have had some kind of like robot battle, which could have also been a mech. Can you imagine if, like, you know, Enkodu also like knives came out? It's like, come on!
Oh my god, yes.
It'd be like the faceless footman battle all over again with like two Enkidus battling each other.
So cool.
Talking of Quanta, shame that Juna's use of Alter Self didn't pay off.
I know.
As they were going up in the lift, she cast Alter Self on herself and turned herself into Quanta. That would have been... It was such a brilliant idea.
It was a great idea. But
it was such a shame.
I think maybe would have fooled people, but a sentient mind or hive mind kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, one of them realises it's not her.
Yeah.
All of them are going to realise. I still think it was a worthy shot.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and David rolled for
it. I think
it
was one of those things like, okay, hindsight, it, you know, it didn't work. But
yeah, sure.
It's worth a try. Like in that situation for it to just be like, can you imagine if it was that simple? It's like, oh no, don't attack us. I'm just escorting them out of the building and battle over.
Yeah.
No, 100%. Like it just meant like they had two paths. They either could have gone the sneaky path or the all guns blazing. And it just happened to be the guns blazing path.
This is true.
Which made for really interesting podcast entertainment.
Oh, of course.
Absolutely.
I got so confused though. I was like, who's hitting who? Where? What's happening? There's a golem flying here and they've hit this one here. And like honestly, by the end of it, I was like,
so many golems.
Oh god. And like we said, they did not go down easy. There was some big damage, like, you know, when we're hearing like, you know, 20 points hit with a shatter and that golem he's like, okay, yeah, you know, it took that hit.
Yeah, no, it's still fine. Yeah.
And it's not falling up, it's not dead. No, not even wounded. Okay, cool, carry on.
And they're dealing the same amount of damage in return as well.
Yeah.
One of them hit Juna and I think she was down to half hit points after the first hit.
It makes you wonder, like, if they've made an enemy out of the Wingthrops, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, they'll need to find their own army that's equally as competent in order to fight back. Because, like we saw, there is a giant army waiting. Like,
yeah.
And they're hard to fight. They're really hard to defeat.
And they're just the grunts. Like, yeah. I had that moment when Quanta came out. You know, I was worried that it was a step too far, that, you know, David was heading towards a TPK at that moment. Because...
Well, it could well have
the
been.
The golems had already proved themselves hard to beat. And then, you know, Quanta comes out with all the bloody knives and a ridiculous... running speed, and I think that one attack that she had against Gaius was like, oh yeah, you know, it's slashing and it's burning and you're poisoned, like all the things in one, and that's just one commander.
That's a
and we know that there are others out there. You know, we've heard that Myra's parents are not themselves, so are they okay? They're not in applied med tech, so maybe they don't have all the scalpels and everything like that, but what have they got going on?
Definitely.
Yeesh.
Ugh. But we did see cool things from our characters as well. We did see cool things from the players.
Yeah,
I just want to point out how awesome Chaperone's reciprocation was.
Oh my goodness,
not just the move itself, but the wording of it.
Yes.
Was so good for Gwendolyn. It was so, again, with these Jane Austen vibes. But yeah, I really like that. I've seen skills like that in the past. But to be able to move your unarmored movement speed, which is something that's very kind of specific to a monk, yeah, you know, that's just going to go up and up and up as she scales through these levels. And it makes so much sense for her character as well. And was kind of the defining thing that meant that Gaius didn't die.
Yes.
Basically. Yeah.
Kind of feel like we should rebrand her as Gwen the Destroyer.
Yep. Love it.
Gwen the Destroyer.
Because she crushed Quanta in the same way that she crushed Crowl. And I think she's just like the MVP when it comes to combat at the moment.
That's very true. Like, she just turns it around. Like, considering how traumatized she was in the previous episode, and then just to turn around and absolutely dominate. Yeah, definitely. Destroyer.
Gwen the Destroyer.
Can we talk about Enkidu's very cool use of Compel Duel towards the end of this battle as well? Because that was pretty awesome. Given that he was obviously naked and he'd lost all of his armor and everything like that.
Fighting in the nude.
But he's still able to use his shield spell and have Cal come out and protect him.
Yeah. That was amazing, to see that his patrons were still in there.
Still there. You know, that was the kind of the one thing that makes you go, oh, actually, this kind of is still Enkidu.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It kind of, that's the one thing that kind of gave you hope, that was like, actually, yeah, it is still him.
He's still in there.
He's still in there.
Interestingly, what if the other Enkidu had been there, Enkidu, Enkodu, whatever we're calling him.
Yep.
If he had been there, I wonder if he would have been able to access the patrons.
Yeah,
if there's like,
absolutely right.
If it's his information.
Because,
like,
they were in the codex.
That's a very good point.
Because we saw the flickers of them.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, God, there's just questions that will never be answered. Yeah.
It's completely fine because the Wingthrops can just make more Enkidus.
That's very true.
Oh, God.
You know, they'll just make as many as they want now. You know, they're going to replace Quanta.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, it was ultimately pointless getting rid of her. It was cool, but she'll just be rebuilt tomorrow.
What if they put all of the 50,000 Golems through and just changed their head to Enkidu's head?
Oh, my word.
That would be so psychologically scarring for everyone listening, playing, just, like, seeing Enkidu's, like, face on this massive, built, like, stone body. Oh, no. That's my nightmare for tonight. Nope. Hate it. Hate it so much.
Well, I'm glad I left you with that mental image.
But yeah, cool episode.
Yeah.
Very cool episode.
Nice little features, like, you know, the auto crit that he got from, you know, Gilgamesh coming out.
Yes. Gilgamesh at the end.
So,
yes.
So cool.
It's like he's gotten stronger, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, since he's been, like, remade, he is just stronger as a person, and it's like, what? How?
Yeah, a bit scary. What have they done? Yeah. We'll find out, I'm sure.
We find out in Spill the Tea.
Cool. Spill the Tea.
Oh, yeah.
All of the tea.
So, before we talk about the other huge reveal of this set of episodes, I have to point out probably one of my favourite moments.
Oh, yeah.
Which was Attack of the Footpath.
That was excellent.
It was so funny.
Just the way that David reiterated, well, it's going to have -5 because it's a footpath.
Yeah, and it's like has disadvantage on the saving throw because it's shattered.
I loved it.
Oh, my God.
It was great.
So funny.
It was great. It's just, you know, this moments of tension and like this moment of calm and almost like downtime and just rest and recovery and footpath moment was excellent.
It was so funny.
I mean, considering the last episode, which was like all fight, like from start to finish, you know, from the moment that they, you know, Enkidu ran into the room to getting on the boat in the tunnel, it was all combat from, you know, like multiple assailants all over there. That I kind of love that in this one, the only combat was this path.
The only danger was the footpath. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's an episode of talking, basically.
Yeah.
So they're all sat in the boat, and initially Enkidu wants to wait until they get the other side of the tunnel before he kind of reveals what happened to him. They also have a little look in the boxes that were stacked in there. I mean, Juno knocks one.
Yeah, she does.
Oh, God.
She's natural one.
Hopefully there was nothing too important in that one.
So the key to all the future, it's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
The anti-Winthrop wand. Ah, it's gone forever.
Damn it. So Enkidu ends up receiving the Armor of Shadows from one of these boxes, which is a Kogian design. Kogian, by the way, noticeably absent from the previous episode.
Mm.
Didn't come and help the golems or anything like that. Just kind of kept himself out the way, which maybe he could be a potential ally in future if they ever end up back there.
Yeah, because he's just a recruit, isn't he?
But he didn't seem to have any interest in taking the test either, which makes you think either he's just completely unambitious, in which case, is he that useful to the Wingthrops anyway?
Yeah.
Or does he know something more about those tests?
Potentially. I mean, there's also, you know, when people talk about Kogian in future episodes. I mean, Myra is not exactly... She doesn't talk about people favourably anyway.
No.
But she does talk about, you know, Kogian being a bit of a... when it comes to magical constructions. So yeah, maybe it's just the fact that he's like, well...
He's, quote, a bit like Orin.
Yeah, exactly. Which take it whichever way you want. But yeah, maybe it's a case of like, he's like, oh, if I take the advancement test, I'm going to die. So I might as well just, I can keep making things here. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Potential ally though.
Yep. And it was Patreon inspired.
Yes.
Which was quite cool.
That was very cool. It was nice to see the stuff because obviously the one I remembered was the Shambling Mound.
Yeah.
Just out of interest, which ones did you vote for? Because I'm assuming you both voted for this.
I did. I can't remember actually.
I know, it was a while ago.
I think probably I voted for the smoke.
I voted for the exclamation mark, you know, the target on his head from all sources, because I just thought that's such a brilliant downside.
That's funny.
To it.
Love that.
I love that it turned out being both though.
Yeah. That was our fault, Sam.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry, Daryl.
Sorry, Enkidu.
Enkidu then does decide he's going to reveal some more of what happened to him. Mm. Sort of starts from the beginning of being zapped in the tunnel. But he can only say so much. He's, you know, physically stopped from being able to speak about his prime directive and all that kind of thing. But instead, June is able to cast detect thoughts on him and is able to actually physically witness everything. Cute, phenomenal moment,
which so
just
good.
It was done beautifully. The audio processing, the music behind it, it was so clever.
The performance as well, like, you know.
The performance, it was so,
like,
so
listening
good.
To Daryl, that I think there's a moment where he just, like, you know, basically swore, and it just seemed so natural for Enkidu to do
absolutely.
That at that moment. Like, I think it was when the other Enkidu walked into the room or something, and he's just like, what the fuck? It's brilliant.
Yep.
The
yeah,
whole way through, like, we were
fantastic
following his confusion.
I know, it was just horrible to kind of hear him go through, like, because this is all behind the scenes, like, whilst our guys are, like, you know, running around speaking to the sort of the Codex version, he's just there going through this weird experience, and then this person telling him that, you know, he's now got this new sort of purpose in life, and it's like, no, and it's like, well, you've got to follow it, really. You know, we've given you this lovely high-tech body, and so you've got to do it. Like, you owe us one. And I hate that. I hate that he owns the wing thrusts.
Yeah, I know. And he doesn't know how they'll catch it
in. I bet he despises that. Like, oh, it's just not right.
Oh, hang on. Something's just occurred to me, actually. I feel like it's in episode 40. Juna tries to cast Sending to Enkidu, right? And she's not able to find a target.
So whenever she casts it on something that isn't real, so when she did it for Herida as well, it's just static in the brain.
So that's detect thoughts, but she did try a sending, I think. She was trying
she
to send,
try
a,
sending.
Send a message to Enkidu. And
yeah, she was talking to Orin
about
it beforehand using message.
And then I think David said it didn't find a target. So my kind of question here is, like, did the new Enkidu, this new body that he's got, and this whole conversation that happened, was that between the point of the sending and Enkidu bursting into the room? Like, was that like a 5-minute conversation that they, you know, that he had with Herida, and it just, you know, followed straight on? Or is Enkidu not able to be targeted by the sending spell?
Or do you remember back when they were in the holding room before they got let into the actual main bit?
She tried to get out to Ginger.
I think it
she?
Might be to do with the force field type thing, as much as anything else, but yeah, maybe.
Could be that.
But good thought, though. At what point did Enkidu come back?
Being too meta.
Oh, I love it. You got to think. Did he actually come back?
Is he back at all?
But we find out so much through this conversation about, you know, the Wingthrops having their big plans that go back 500 years, and that either Enkidu or Gilgamesh has King's blood, but they're not sure. We get the tip about the demonologist, Geremir Hastan, which I cannot wait for this.
I know.
I'm so excited.
Flesh out that storyline.
Is it, presumably, given that he's on the map, he's another of the sort of mirrors in the plinth room. He's going to be one of those guys.
Yeah, there was a bit of talk about that, about how, you know, Herida could be one of the scratched out ones, or, you know, the broken ones to sever that connection. Yeah, it's nice that's still coming, you know, coming back around, little hints to it every now and then.
Yeah, exactly. And the more we meet these mages, archmages, which one is going to be that do not trust? And is that from Kral's perspective, or is that a note to the party?
Yeah.
Like the bluff, double bluff kind of thing.
No, very true.
It makes you go in and question everything you're being told. Like, you know, for the good of Dravain, is it really for the good of Dravain?
Well, this is one thing that I've really been wondering, particularly when I listened back to this episode, is that, you know, both Kral and Herida in their own rights have been building armies.
Yeah.
And they keep talking about it, you know, being for the good of the world, like some kind of like oncoming threat that Kral's clearly seen, Herida is clearly aware of, and has been planning for over 500 years. So firstly, what is this threat? You know, flames, floods, the dead rising and all of that. There is that. But, you know, how much do they know about this? How much are they not able to let on, or it ruins the future?
Yeah. Very true.
What part does Lord Beren have to play in all of this? You know, is this like, he keeps getting dropped in every now and then, you know, vying for the throne.
He just feels like such a pawn, though. He just feels like he's just there to be put on the throne and like controlled and manipulated.
Yeah.
If he's got to use frosting, do you know what I mean? If he's got to use these illegal methods of getting people to support his claim, then he's just there to kind of be like a body, I think.
Well, either that or he's the leader of the Hex. Who knows? Because we know that the Hex deal with frosting as well. And, you know, maybe the Hex are trying to work their way up into the biggest seat in the country. You know,
everyone wants the throne.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Including Enkidu, very strongly.
Oh,
and you've got Timon Prevos as well, who's the other
Timon Prevos.
Yeah.
That we know very little about, other than he's trying to upset the ways of things at the moment. So there'll be more to come about him, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Better be.
Yeah.
It does kind of sound like Prevos is, you know, Enkidu actually isn't too bothered by Prevost. Like, you know, he could actually fall in line with that idea of like the country being changed.
Yeah.
But I don't know. His kind of his want to be on the throne seems stronger.
I mean, he could have done. Is he going to do that now?
Yeah, exactly. When push comes to shove and like they get there, is he going to actually follow through with the Winthrop like directive, or is he going to stick to his own guns?
And will he have a choice?
Yeah. Exactly.
When the time comes. I mean, there was that kind of imagery in the episode, and I got real like Marvel vibes in this. I got the, you know, Black Panther with the, you know, Kogian suit, and then they mentioned like his chest opened up into a blue triangle, and I was seeing like Iron Man vibes there as well. So, you know, he's Iron Panther.
Love it.
Iron Panther.
Amazing.
But, you know, it's like that is over his heart, I believe, or in the center of his chest. So, you know, and they said, feel free to go against us, but does that mean that there's still like a, you know, a backup drive that, you know, they'll be able to take over Enkidu and manage what he's doing when he's on the throne?
Mm-hmm.
Or is Erida's mission just literally to get somebody back on the throne?
Just anybody.
To stop some threat that's going to happen, and then all of the army is going to follow Enkidu and his dreams. Yeah.
Who knows? I've got this horrible feeling that the closer that Enkidu gets to the throne and to Mervai, the less of himself he'll become.
Ooh.
I don't know. I just, there's something about, you know, as he gets closer to his prime directive, the more the Winthrop influence will take over.
Yeah.
And maybe perhaps by the time they get to that point of being able to put him on the throne, there'll be a very tough decision to make about whether that is Enkidu or not.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And whether he realizes which parts were absolutely him, which of his goals were, because, you know, it was always his goal to be king or to see his brother on the throne.
No, absolutely, yeah.
You know, to see Gilgamesh put back in that position.
Yeah.
But there was something about when they were saying, like, you know, is this what you want? And he was adamant at this point, like, that is my mission.
Yeah.
That is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that is him and how much of that is the new influence in his head of like that is his prime directive.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Kind of consumed him potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah, because it's lost that kind of emotional aspect, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole point is he's got these people stuck inside of him and he wants them to, he needs them to be free and like live their lives. Whereas now it just seems like he's just carrying them to where they need to be.
Yeah.
It just sounds like he's just got like essentially just a rucksack full of people. So it's definitely lost that kind of emotional, like sort of inside check, kind of like making sure everybody's okay in there. It just feels like, nope, we got to do this. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And should they come across Geremir Hastan, the demonologist, and he's given the choice to extract them, is he going?
Will he do it?
Will he do it? Exactly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That is scary.
Because he's not going to have bodies to put them back into unless they go back to the Winthrops and take a few bodies.
And they make him a body.
No.
Ooh, that would be horrible.
God, yeah.
That's actually a very good point. He could easily just sacrifice them back to the Winthrops.
Ugh.
They're in the Codex anyway.
Well, I mean, he did... Oh, God, he did say that, you know, the Codex or the Erida is, it's a stockpile of their information. It's not their, like, their dreams, their souls and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's all the information that they have. And in a way, they kind of have that with Gilgamesh. We don't know in what capacity, but, you know, there was definitely a moment in, I think it was episode 40, when they were like, oh, is, you know, Alcibiades here? And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm here. Like, just appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They probably do have that information, but if they're able to get them out of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Scary.
Don't know. I'm very excited for that bit of the story arc to come up.
Mm.
Hopefully sooner rather than later. But
hurry
up. I kind of get the idea that, you know, they go demon hunting after this, you know, go
demon
see
hunting.
This demonologist and it's like, oh, I will help you if you hunt this greater demon. Go fight a Demogorgon.
Great.
Yeah. Do we want to move on to at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, go on then. After spending an entire episode in a boat going down this tunnel, which they managed to get a long rest on, you know, it's at least an eight-hour journey in a straight line down this tunnel with
very far away, or a very slow boat.
Potentially some golems following them behind. But yeah, I mean, this was a beautiful wrapping up episode. We had, you know, time at the end of the boat. We had some stupid antics in front of a waterfall and, you know, swimming through. Oh, God.
It's always Gaius.
Gaius.
Yeah.
I'll just jump off the edge. Oh, it's two waterfalls. Oh, great.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, it's kind of a case of eventually making their way back to Drostad and, you know, having that chat. Enkidu got to use his armor, which is very nice. He used his pass without trace, which means that anytime he casts it from now on, we'll be seeing potentially some exclamation marks
maybe
over the head.
Ding.
Or just puffing out smoke. I love that. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be really hard to detect. Just like there's just smoke coming up. Oh, damn it. Yeah. A cloak that only works at night. But yeah, getting back there, relaying this information, which, oh my God, it was so cute. That moment between Orion and Myra that...
Aww.
I know.
You know, and I kind of feel like that's what this arc was, in a way, was...
It was about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the reason why they went and why she joined them was because she was like, oh, my parents are a bit weird.
Yep.
Do you want to go check this out? And then they just so happened to kind of have the sort of statue be like, Wingthrop detected. And they kind of just went with it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was just kind of like, oh, cool, let's just do the test then. La, 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 la.
So- yeah, they just... They just pushed on with it. But yeah, their relationship throughout this arc was a big thing for me because it started from, well, particularly for Orin, like, you know, admiration, like, ooh, another artificer, to hatred, to, you know, respect and inspiration. And then finally at the end, family. And I just, that moment, like, right at the end of this episode where, you know, he gets a little hug.
Oh,
which we're assuming is from Myra. It could have been Therosine, but, you know.
Could you?
But, you know, just for that to...
Yeah, a small hug on Orin.
I'm assuming it's Myra.
Yeah. It's just kind of nice because they were talking about all these dark things throughout the episode. Like, oh, yeah, your parents, you know, they've been codified and now you know what that means.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all kind of doom and gloom. Erida could be watching every single moment, but just having a little cuddle at the end, you know, that hope. And
it's like she just wants to be tough. Like, it doesn't feel like she was being mean because she was, like... She just wanted to prove that she was better. Like, it just felt like the whole thing was just an act. But then when she's invisible, she can finally be like, no, actually, I really admire your work and you're really cool. Okay, I'm going.
Aww.
Like, it is really sweet.
Yeah. And I think it's a nature versus nurture thing. Her nature is that, you know, she's got family and, you know, she's going to cling on to that. Whereas the nurture that, you know, this family seems to breed competition.
Exactly.
And
that's what it's about, is one-upping the person next to you. So of course she's gonna, you know, he's older than her and his designs are sticks with gum, you know, and you know, she's gonna knock that around. But it was a nice kind of arc for Orin as well, because he's always been, you know, like, you know, tinkering and making these things, but this arc was very much like Orin with moments of failure or not quite being up to the standard that other people are, you know, kind of seeing where he wants to be. You know, helping monsters with his magic. It's like, oh, okay, actually, I probably do need to learn a bit more about which elements. He was talking about that in the golem fight. It's like, okay, well, I can't actually damage them with either of these. So how can I be useful in this fight?
And no, exactly.
Yeah, just seeing him like, oh, yeah, you know, I've made my own little work table. And
like he's learned from her.
Yeah.
Look, I made this, see? Please be proud of me.
But yeah, something else happens in that Myra and Therosine are going to go and potentially join up with the Rose family.
That is going to be interesting.
Which got me excited for a bit, you know, even more of a reason to delve into Gwendolyn's backstory in the future.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, we're working our way through now, aren't we?
Mm.
We're getting there in terms of people and their lives.
Yeah, starting to get a few more threads to unravel their stories a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, we still haven't found out everything about, you know, backstories for any of these characters, really. There's so much grey that we still need to explore. And I feel like with some of them...
Stuff they don't know.
Yeah,
I was going to say, stuff they don't know about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, Orin and Gaius don't really know about their heritage, you know, Orin especially so. And, like, Gaius just, like, lies every time he talks about it. It's always just a lie. So, you know, like... Having someone basically expose him in front of everyone is ideal, because then we get to know more.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Just out of curiosity, because we kind of talked about, like, you know, the Orin and Myra arc. Who do you reckon had the biggest arc in this chapter?
Ooh, good question.
Well, Enkidu did die.
Yeah.
True.
He had the biggest physical arc.
Physically, he had a bit of a ride. I'm trying to think.
I don't know. There's an argument for all of them, though.
Yeah.
Is why you've asked the question, of course.
Because, I mean, you know, even with Juna, you know, she came from a point of like, you know, this is magic. This is what magic is. And I love magic, to seeing this like constructed magic. And, you know, there was a moment where it was kind of like, oh, we're not going to, I think somebody said, we're not going to kill Quanta because how does that help? I think it was Orin that said that. And Vicky was saying, like, oh, Juna hates that. She just wants, there's a real kind
of... Like, Gaius was like, we're going to burn this place to the ground, like, to Gwen to reassure her. And then, like, Juna just wanted to kill Quanta. And I think she did, to be fair, towards the end, I think she was starting to get Orin, especially in episode 40, she was starting to get Orin on board with that idea.
Yeah.
Like, he was so angry after Enkidu. Yeah. I mean, you know, I know there was the joke that they were betrothed, but I feel like he almost kind of took it to heart. Like, yeah, this is, yeah, you know, like, they've really grown in their relationship, and I think that Enkidu really respected Orin. So for Orin to just suddenly lose him, and, you know, and in as well for Gaius and Orin, you know, it was in chase of their heritage. It was in, they are the Winthrops. So they must have so much guilt on their conscience that they put their friends in this situation, because they didn't have to take the test.
No,
it could have just
didn't.
Been Orin and Guy. But they all took the test together, and one of their friends died. Like, that is a lot to, like, so I'd say for that reason, definitely Orin and Guy.
It's the true cost of knowledge, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And Guy just needs to be honest about his life. Like, Guy just needs to tell the truth. Like, can you stop lying to your friends? Like,
I think it's compulsive. He doesn't have a choice at this point. He has to lie.
You can't help it.
Yeah,
whether
I guess
it be to, you know, protect their or protect himself, you know, it kind of got that idea, you know, that he's not talking about his family because they are so high up within the hex, you know.
Yeah.
But to even mention them is to bring danger onto yourself. Mm. But yeah, that's, you know, with Orin, it was kind of, he's been searching for family, and that's been kind of his, you know, primary directive. Or it's difficult because he was finding his family, but in doing so, he lost his family.
Yeah.
And his found family, you know, the people that are closest to him. And I think that's kind of what he was, like you say, struggling with in that, is like, okay, well, my actual family, my flesh and blood family, I hate them now, and I can't believe that I'm a part of this, but actually I now have you, Guy, you know, to be my real family, and oh god,
so cute,
and to take away Enkidu.
And I mean, like, for Gwen as well, like, there wasn't a huge amount for her to gain by entering that Winthrop workshop.
No, definitely not.
Like, there was no big reveal that she was kind of going in expecting to get, and particularly given the kind of tension between her and Enkidu throughout this process. They were the last two into their tubes before they did the test as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to go in.
And kind of like, almost like pushing each other and helping each other.
We can do
sum
this,
up the
courage,
I guess. Yeah, exactly. And she was the first one to speak, to say what has happened to Enkidu. She was the first one, which I thought was like quite telling about, you know, they've had their big kind of punch up fight, and they've kind of got that out of their system a bit.
Yeah. They just needed to beat each other up a little bit. Now they're fine.
Yeah,
exactly. All it took. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I think their relationship will be very interesting going forward.
Yeah, what
as well
does
now.
This mean for Gwenkidu?
I know.
I know.
I mean, she gets to see him in assless chaps, because that's canon now.
Oh my God. I nearly forgot about that. Assless chaps.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, Matt. And then he got to see her be Mary Poppins and glide down a waterfall, poofy dress style.
Yes.
Just gently floating down, like, good day.
Yeah, love it.
But hopefully, with the war fans soon, it kind of sounded like Therosine was happy to give up those, you know, components for her to make that, you know, because she lost the mithril sheets for, you know, everything that was happening within the complex, within the, you know, when they were in the workshop, those mithril sheets were taken away very smartly by the DM.
Yep.
But, you know, the idea that she's got some materials here, we might see that at the beginning of the next arc.
Yeah.
I don't know. Looking at Pippa, she's not making any giveaway faces. Damn it.
I'm sorry, that information.
No! Don't you dare. Take a head.
We tried. We give it a last
Guy,
shot.
Guy, kick her off the edge.
Thank you, David, for that get out clause.
Damn it.
Do we have a favourite moment or two to sum up our lovely chat together?
We all know yours is the footpath.
Yep.
Love the footpath.
The big bad of the campaign, yeah.
Yeah.
The big bad. The footpath. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I've got to be honest, my favourite moment is honestly Guy turning round and giving the middle finger.
Flipping the bird.
Oh, flipping the bird as he goes away, because it was just like
the build up.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there was not, like, it was such an intense battle, and it was just like a whole episode. That is probably the longest kind of battle since the sort of the library.
We've had a few, haven't we? But not many.
Yeah, like the only big battle was probably when they were
the time hopping one against with Kral in the library and the Vondels.
That's the one. Yeah, that's probably the longest battle. And then, you know, that was ages ago when you think about it. So this was a long initiative. And then just to end it with them on a boat and then him just turning around being like, "Wah!" And that's like, it was such a like character, like it was such like a moment for the party.
Such a guide thing.
Yeah,
he did
exactly.
A really good build up to it as well, wasn't it?
Because it could have been really intense. Like, it could have been that they just like collapsed into the boat and just like didn't move or just stared him down. But no, he had to just like one up them one last time. And that was
it. Yeah, absolutely.
I loved that.
I'd have to say the moment that made me laugh the most, like really kind of like spontaneous laugh, mm-hmm. was I think it was Gwendolyn saying she kicked something and instantly Chris was like, ow.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just got me. I think I was on a train at the time and people looked at me a bit weird. But in terms of my favourite moment, like the bit that stood out to me, if I think about this arc, mm-hmm. it coming down to one moment, was the... can I share this voice clip with you?
Yeah.
And just hearing that process, because like I say, it was just done so mm-hmm. beautifully, like that kind of like echoey Erida style, you know, to the audio itself. And also just, you know, knowing that we were hearing, like the other players were hearing that for the first time. Mm-hmm. Not at the same time that we were, obviously. It's not live. But I kind of felt like we were sharing that experience of like, yeah, okay, this is what happened. And also all the information and just kind of, you know, I'd made it up in my head that the Wingthrups were bad guys. And now I don't know, like they could be, but actually their intentions could be good. They're just a little bit warped. Like is their mm-hmm. prime directive to see somebody on the throne and to protect Dravain? But it's just in a kind of like iRobot style-y kind of thing. Like the rules have changed. It's developed since, I don't know. I've come off my favorite moment and gone into the whole like, oh, all the family members were codified at the same time, as Myra said. So that must mean that they're just building up to
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, this has been fun, guys.
This was a nice chat. Yeah,
this
I like this.
This was great. Yeah. I can't believe that we've like essentially had to cover the end of a giant plot arc. Like, people died for real this time. Like, people died for real, and it's... even with the previous one when they were in the cube and they realized that everything was powered by like animals as well mm-hmm. and like souls, it was just, it suddenly became a lot more real and it became more like, oh no, we're not playing. Like, this isn't some fun, like, oh, look, we eat this cake and now we're all like, ooh, a bit dizzy and funny. Yeah. Like, no, this is real life.
Oh, you can flip to dark in a second. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Definitely. Just shows the versatility of the game. You can make it funny or you can make it really serious. Ooh. And everyone goes, oh my God. Ah.
It's like you can talk to chipmunks or you can now be a weird construct thing that doesn't feel, eat or sleep.
Yeah. There is no in between. Amazing. Well, thank you very much to Superfan Sam and Superfan Pippa and me, Lord Crumpet.
Yeah, Lord Crumpet.
Lord Crumpet. Yes. Wait. Honestly, this has been such a ride and I'm glad I got to share it with people and not just David.
Well, I can't wait to do the next one.
Yeah, honestly, can't wait to listen to more. And obviously, if you haven't already listened to it, listen to the Candlekeep Mysteries, because that's a little side adventure that Daryl is DMing and
so
you should definitely listen to. Yeah, it is
excellent.
So good. And it's
Hashtag we love the Maestanis.
Honestly, they are just the family dynamic. These are people who are related and it is just great hearing them interact with each other. So if you haven't listened to that, go listen to that. That's my recommendation.
So funny.
Do it now.
Go. I don't want to say goodbye.
It's only goodbye for now. It's a non, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only a non.
A non for now.
Are we doing it all together?
I suppose we can.
I guess so.
Shall we?
Yeah.
A non for now. Yeah, that was good.
A non, everybody.
Smash it.
A non.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.